feels like they need to go somewhere else for some management.
Well, clearly, when a fishing group is saying that, that means there's a problem with the system. And we need to do everything we can to improve it. Because if we're not improving it, that means fishing's going to have a problem. And fishing has a problem, then the net result is we all pay the price sooner or later by less product. So I think one of the things we need to do on this one is the state and the feds have to work better together. But if not, then we do have an obligation to make sure the feds manage these fisheries the best we can. And we've done a pretty good job, I believe, from the Magnuson-Stevens Act. As you know, as chair of the committee that has jurisdiction over the Magnuson-Stevens Act, we're in the process of not redrafting totally, but making some changes and improving it. And this is an issue that has come up, and the state has done a fair but not a great job, and now I'm hearing from fishermen both on the recreational end, the commercial end, and clearly the subsistence end, that the state in some cases has failed them. And so we have to look at this issue seriously. We have to figure out, can the feds play a role here as they did in the years gone by when, if you remember the 70s and 80s, when fishery policy was a mess. And now with the Magnuson-Stevens Act, it brought some sustainability and some sanity to it. But we need more work around this. But I would say these fishing groups that are now starting to wonder about should the feds be involved or not, I think it's very important that we take that seriously. That's an indication that they are concerned about what's going on. And I hate to do this. I got to switch phones because I'm about to go into a car that I'm being driven. Could I pop off for a minute and pop back on?
Yeah, I think this would be a good time to take a short break. U.S. Senator Mark Begich with us this morning on the coffee table. You're tuned to KDLL and KBBI. We'll be right back in just a minute. Stay with us.
Thank you. Shaylin, I believe we have Senator Begich back with us now.
All right, great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Terry, and thank you so much, Senator Begich, for getting back with us. We certainly appreciate you again taking some time out of a busy schedule as you make your way around the Kenai Peninsula this week. As we left off, we were talking about kind of the relationship between federal and state government and how some things are working. And something that I heard recently that made me kind of curious, someone was speaking about the late Senator Ted Stevens, and he would come back and hold joint sessions at the Alaska State House with the state representatives and state senate, and for lack of a better term, sort of lecture them on sort of what the state needed to do, how the state needed to galvanize itself in order to get his colleagues back in Washington, D.C., to understand these issues and then to eventually kind of play ball to develop some programs and develop these partnerships. I'm curious if you see that as part of your role as a senator, to come back to the state and engage our state representatives, our state senators, in sort of the process and try to get them as unified as you can in some of these areas to try to get things done before, in terms of trying to build those coalitions back in Washington. Is that part of your gig?
Absolutely. I come back every year to speak to the joint session, and that's part of the process of trying to get them to focus on issues that are important from their perspective, obviously from Alaska's perspective, and how they connect to what we're doing in Washington, D.C. And I'll give you some examples. When we were working on expanding the joint training space up in the Fairbanks region for the military, the federal government had put about $110 million. I asked the state folks to consider additional resources so we can do a partnership there. They added about $80 million to that. Now we've built the bridge over Tanana, expanding that effort, and that, I think, helped us secure the F-16s to stay up in Fairbanks. Or the most recent, when I asked the state to consider $5 million for, as I said, the Unmanned Aircraft Research Center, they did that. Now we're the number one research center being developed in the country because of that partnership. On the flip side, when I think they're doing something that I think is just going to get us in trouble, for example, this last session when they tried to dismantle public education, that was a big mistake because the amount of money, as I said earlier, that we've been able to allocate to public education, for them then to dismantle it sends the wrong message back to Washington. Or the most recent issue with the gas line. You know, we're at risk of potentially losing the gas line office here in Alaska because the state can't get their act together on what is the right gas line. Is it a bullet line? Is it a big line? Is it a large line up on the North Slope, comes down to Fairbanks, then tees off to, you know, both South Central, where in South Central? They need to make a decision, because if we don't, we're going to lose that coordinated office that works with us. So there is absolutely, I mean, they, you know, this last time when I gave them you might call it a lecture on public education, they wrote me some nasty letters back saying, keep out of my, you know, their state business. Well, hey, I'm born and raised here. I'm a resident, and I'll say what I have to say, and I'll also say where it needs to work with our federal government and where they're creating problems that make my job and Senator Murkowski's and Congressman Young's job harder because of their inability to get some things done.
Again, tune to the coffee table this morning here on KDLL and KBBI. We're speaking with Senator Mark Begich. If you're tuned into KBBI, we'd love to hear your questions. 235-7721 is the number for our Southern Peninsula listeners. And if you're tuned into KDLL, it's a toll-free call, 1-800-979-5224. And I wanted to stick with kind of a bigger picture sort of issue here for just a moment. Of course, this past week, we saw several Supreme Court rulings come out. And I'm curious about one ruling in particular, and this kind of ties back into the healthcare discussion we were having a bit earlier in the show. The Supreme Court, of course, ruling that closely held businesses can, for lack of a better term, put their religious beliefs out there and use that as a way to get away from providing certain contraception to some employees. And I'm curious, because of Alaska's unique business climate, we have a lot of those closely held companies, and certainly our small business community, they're engaged in the community, and people know where they stand on things, and they have their own beliefs. And I'm curious if you see major impacts from this Supreme Court ruling here in Alaska.
Well, it could. As you know, Alaska is a very pro-choice state because we had a kind of libertarian streak in us. We don't want the government to tell us what to do with our bodies, especially women. And I think in this case, what it's done is opened up a Pandora's box and basically says to women in Alaska, women across the country, that your rights is going to be diminished every day now. And that means access to birth control is limited, or in some cases, not available at all by some employers because of their own personal belief. In reality, we know women want to have access to birth control. They want to be able to have that freedom, and they want to be able to make that decision themselves, not for some their employer to make that decision for them. It's kind of like, you know, dad coming and telling them what to do. And I think this is it creates a huge problem. And I made a pretty strong statement when the ruling came out that this is definitely going to open up the Pandora's box to restricting women's access to health care, not only today, but into the future. And again, having your boss tell you if you can have birth control, that is going beyond where I think anyone had ever anticipated. This court ruling, oddly enough, five men made the ruling, four women said no. So you can kind of see, you know, once again, and these five men are deciding what's right for women's access to health care and birth control. And I think women are fed up with that.
And we're going to go back to the phone lines right now. Carolyn joins us on line three. Carolyn, good morning. You're on Coffee Table.
Oh, hi. This is Caroline.
Hi, Caroline. What's your question?
Well, I have a good question, I think. I've talked to you before, and I've talked to some other people about a possible rail line around the Kenai Peninsula. And I noticed you drove to all those communities, and I also heard that there was a tragic accident, or an accident again, and the highway was closed again yesterday between Anchorage and all of us down here on the Lower Peninsula. So I heard you mentioning something about possibly a rail to get some things out of the north. Do you think that there would be a possibility, if we started now, that we could work with some studies to see if it's possible to have a light rail down connecting Homer to possibly the Anchorage Airport?
I think that's an interesting idea. I think your first challenge is going to be your population base and access back and forth, meaning the one they're looking at right now, the railroad is looking at, is commuter rail between Anchorage and Matsu.
Mm-hmm.
If that is successful, and I think it will be, then they'll start reviewing other opportunities. I think it's been a strong, long challenge. I remember when I was mayor, I tried to get the railroad to see this as an opportunity, and they just never wanted to do it. Now there seems to be some interest, and there's two pieces to it. One is going to the Matsu, and I think this test they're going to be doing will be, I think, popular, and I think it will have results. The second one was from downtown Anchorage out to Diamond. And why is that important? Because from Diamond, then, you're starting to move south.
Oh, yeah.
To get to your region will be very difficult because of the population base. But let's never say never, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Matsu will give us some good information that we don't have today on how many people will use it, what is the price point that people will use it, and then this from Anchorage to the Diamond Center, which is the longer term, will start telling us how we can move south.
Oh.
So that's kind of the thought that's going on.
Okay.
The Alaska Railroad is starting to work on this, so I'd encourage you to just check in with the railroad on their Matsu to Anchorage to give you some insight of what they're doing.
Oh, well, thank you so much for that. And also, I really do think you're doing a wonderful job representing us in Alaska, down in Washington, D.C., and I've made some phone calls in your efforts and helping a little bit with the Homer office here, and I'm glad to see that you are down here, you know, with the office, so people see that you're here. But also, I want to question you, so you want to run again, but what is the reason that you want to run again? Are there some unfinished things that you're hoping to do? What are those things that you might want to be looking at?
Well, obviously, you know, after 6 years there, I've gained enormous seniority. After this election, I'll be 55 in seniority in the U.S. Senate, which is a pretty significant shift. There's a generational shift that's occurred that has given me some authority in the sense of, one, that cloud of seniority. Second, I chair the Oceans Subcommittee, which the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the Coast Guard reauthorization are under, and the Arctic. And those are, you know, the Arctic obviously is an ongoing, unfinished opportunity for us to manage that the right way. Being chair of that committee gives me the authority, and it's no better person, to be frank with you, to have an Alaskan chair of that committee, because that way we can guide it the right way rather than some outside senator telling us what to do.
Exactly.
That is very important. On the flip side, you know, I sit on the Appropriations Committee. This is a rare thing to have both United States senators on the Appropriations Committee together from the same state. I think that's an important, as we know, the Appropriations Committee is the holy grail for Alaska, and it's very hard to get on those committees, and the seniority and clout that I've gained has given me that authority. But putting that all aside, I think there's some incredible opportunities still for Alaska. When you think of the fishing and capacity that we have in the future, the Arctic, the new, we just talked a little about technology development that's going on and what we can do there. I think the area of education and energy, we are like the incubator for the country when it comes to education or energy issues, no matter if it's solar, wind, geothermal, hydro, you name it. We're doing it here, and I think we can teach the rest of the country a lot about how to do this, new energy sources. And lastly, I'll be very frank with you, Alaska is the ground zero to climate change. And for us not to be in the forefront on that, trying to figure out what we can do to mitigate and manage this changing environment we live in, the role that I have on the many different committees, I think is very important for an Alaska voice to be heard. So, you know, I see a lot of opportunity. I've gained some important clout and seniority that I want to be able to use long-term for Alaska. And this generational shift that's occurred in the Senate, meaning the older members have pretty much retired out as of this year. There's a few left. This won't happen again for another 20 years. So any new member that comes in from Alaska will be stuck at 100 or 99, and it'll be hard for them to able to get the things in the positions that I currently hold.
All right. Thank you for that call, Caroline. And we just have a couple of minutes left, Senator Begich. And as we wrap up here, I'm really curious as we got into that that bit of the conversation about it becoming campaign season and why you're running for Senate again, as you do roam the halls of the Senate, I'm really curious when you're with your colleagues, what are the hardest things about making cases for Alaskan projects or when you're trying to rally support for things purely Alaskan? What's the hardest thing in trying to communicate those ideas with your colleagues?
Well, they think that Alaska always gets these special things. Well, the answer is yes, because we are unique, and I think that's the challenge, trying to explain the vast distances that we have to travel and move around. It's why over the last 6 years I've brought well over a dozen cabinet secretaries. This summer I'll have three more presidential cabinet secretaries here, multiple U.S. senators here, educating them on what Alaska is about, because once they're here, they walk away having a whole better and a much more improved impression of Alaska, and helps me make the pitch when I'm working on Alaska issues that it's not being that we just want our own special deal. It's because we are a very unique environment. For example, when they raised the postal rates all across the country and they included Alaska in that, they forgot that we don't have roads to 80% of our community. So we were able to reverse that, reduce it back down to the old rates. Or when they wanted to cut essential air service, you know, the delegation went to work, and the net result is Alaska got exempted. Or when they wanted to change the trucking rules of how truck transportation would work, Alaska, again, is separated out because, you know, we have a haul road and some other issues that are very unique to Alaska. So we have to constantly go in this education mode, which is okay. I'm okay with that, as long as they are open-minded, not just kind of anti-Alaska because they think Alaska gets things that they shouldn't get. We've been able to be successful. I mean, the F-16s up in Fairbanks, you know, as an example.
Right, all right. And Senator Begich, thank you so much for taking some time and joining us this morning. Certainly do appreciate it. Wish we could have gotten to a lot more, but we do appreciate your time. Thank you.
Look forward to calling in again. Have a great day.
All right, you too. And I want to thank all of our listeners who called in and all of you for listening out there in Radioland. And, of course, our intrepid production team down in Homer, Mr. Terry T-Bone Renzel and Shady Grove Oliver working the phones for us this morning. I'm Shaylin Cochran. Your turn to tune to KDLL and KBBI. Have a great morning.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Melissa McCarthy was a good kid in school. She played tennis. She was a